Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Megillah Daf Tes. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you're not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage. If you're already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the Daf before the shiur, and even better, order your personal volume of this Maseches. Our address is gmarkings@gmail.com. Our shiur today will be beginning from three lines from the bottom of Ches Omid Beis. The quote from the Mishnah is Usforim Nichtovim Bechol Loshein. Before we proceed in the Gemara, we want to take note of a geometric form which represents one of our series markings, or at times a marking that is an attempt to keep track of the back and forth style of the Gemara's discussion. In this case, we have one of those. We call this a ma'akav. So if you glance to the outside margin of the page, you'll notice we have a heading, Nosei Mivneh. Nosei is a topic, Mivneh is a structural note, and in our marked Gemaras, the Shas Ozer, we attempt to provide topic headings as each new sugya arrives. In this case, we have a volcano form, a trapezoid. You'll notice we have in parentheses the term ma'akav, which means an attempt to keep track. With the narrow part facing upwards, those are kushios. You'll notice shortly that there is a similar form, however, flipped over with the narrow part facing down. Those will represent responses. But in our note, we've written kushios, stira b'inyan ksivas tanach b'chol lashon. We will encounter a contradiction regarding the writing of the Tanakh, Torah Nevi'im Uksuvim, in any language. Is it so? Our Mishnah had mentioned that Sforim, that's Tanakh, can be written in any language. We will then notice a flipped over form, and a double underline will also be used to feature the expression Lo Kashya. These are responses, in other words, attempts to resolve the seeming contradiction. As you scan ahead in the Gemara, you will notice that it's not so easily resolved. In fact, there will be several attempts at resolving. The attempts will be numbered in the margin to the space to the immediate left-hand side of the Gemara text. Here at the bottom line of our Gemara, you will notice a 1 with a low kasha response. However, at the top of Tes, Omid Aleph, you'll notice another kasha pops up. So that, in fact, ruins the answer 1. That will bring us to answer 2. But before we can go beyond 2, and you'll notice that there is a question on that, and that will lead us into 3. And number 3 will also be questioned, which will bring us to 4. However, by the time we get to answer or resolution number 4, that does not get questioned. It doesn't get, let's say, rejected. But the Gemara will provide a 5th approach as well. So now, turning to the Gemara and the contradiction. Veraminu. The Gemara presents a Tanaic source. As you can see, it's in a frame, as we note all Tanaic sources in our marking system. The source says, Mikro Shekosvoi Targum. That means, if you have something that's supposed to be written in Mikro form, which we call it Hebrew, and you write it in Aramaic, the Targum Shekosvoi Mikro, or something that's supposed to be in Aramaic, and you write it in Hebrew, Uksav Ivri. Ksav Ivri is a script that's, we would have to call it maybe an ancient Hebrew form. In other words, it's not the script that we are used to. If you have any, if you have something that's supposed to be, let's say, a holy piece of writing, but you altered it, either in the translation of it from Mikro to Targum, or from Targum to Mikro, or the script that you chose is Ksav Ivri and not what we have, which is called Ksav Ashuri, Eino Metame Es Hayodayim. it will not communicate the impurity that's associated with holy writings. Tumas Yodayim. We've made reference to Tumas Yodayim in the past. That is characteristic of Sfarim that are Kodosh, Sfarim HaKadoshim. Noticing, though, if you changed from what it's supposed to be, it doesn't have that holiness, and hence it doesn't have the ability to communicate the Tumas Yodayim. Under what circumstances will there be Tumas Yodayim? So the source says, Achich Devenu Biksav Ashuris Al HaSefer Ubidyo. Tumas Yodayim will be achieved only if it's written with Ksav Ashuris, the letters of the alphabet that we are familiar with, which we call the Ksav Ashuris. It has to be written, Al HaSefer would be on parchment, and Ubidyo with the acceptable ink. What do we do? In our Mishnah, it was stated that Svarmer Nichtovim Bechol Lashon. Here we have a Tanaic source that's rather rigid. It says that there's no flexibility. Omar Rava Lo Kashya. Rava represents the first response or attempt to resolve these two sources and says there's no problem. Kan Begufon Shelanu. Kan Begufon Shelahem. Our Mishnah that says that it can be written in any language, that's provided the letters that you use are Hebrew or Ashuris letters, so that you can have a situation that you are writing it in English, but it's transliterated using Hebrew characters. Kan, Begufon Shelahen, the mocker of the Voraminu, that indicated rigidity, that, in other words, there was no Tumas Yodayim, that's Begufon Shelahen, because you used non-Hebrew letters, non-Hebrew characters. Amale Abaye. Abaye questions this resolution, and he says, "B'mai ukimto lehahi? How did you establish the Viraminhu source? Begufon Shelahen." In other words, the source that said there is no holiness, and we're saying that in light of the fact that it said there's no Tumas Yodayim. How did we set that up? Well, how did Rava set that up? He set that up as referring to a case where it's written with non-Hebrew letters. If that be the case, my irya mikro shekosvoi targum v'targum shekosvo mikro. If its lack of kedusha is simply character related, letter related, then why does the source indicate that it loses its holiness because of some type of translation that transpired? You don't need to come onto that. Afilu mikra shekosvei mikra, even if it's in Hebrew, the content is in Hebrew and you left it in Hebrew, or it's an Aramaic content and you left it with its Aramaic content, nami, it too would not have Tumas Yodayim, being that you used non-Ashuris, non-Hebrew letters, the Hakotani. It in fact says in that very source, Ad Shichtevenu Ashuris Al HaSefer Bidyo, that there is no Tumas Yodayim until you use Hebrew characters. So that if you're setting up that source as referring to non-Hebrew characters, then it would not have been necessary to explain its lack of holiness because of some type of translation that was practiced. Namely, you went from mikra to targum or from targum to mikra. Even mikra into mikra, meaning using a Hebrew content, but simply using non-Hebrew letters and writing it using the non-Hebrew letters to convey the Hebrew content. For example, you would write the first word of the Torah, which is Bereishis, you would say B-R-E-I-S-H-E-S, Bereishis. And that would be an example of mikra that you preserve in the mikra form. That's non-translation, it's transliteration. And the fact that I used non-Hebrew letters, I used English letters, that itself would be grounds for its non-holiness. So it's questionable at this point that that we should accept Rava's explanation of the source. Ella, lo kashya, approach number two. Ha Rabbanon, ha Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel. The Mishnah that says b'chol lashon, that is according to the Rabbanon. The source that mentions limitation, that's according to Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel. We've seen Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel in our Mishnah. He said that there is no that Sfarim cannot be written in just any language. He mentioned that it could be written in Greek, but as far as any language, just any language, no. And this source, the Varamino source, also was a limiting type source. So we want to ascribe that to Reb Shimon ben Gamliel. The Gemara asks, E Reb Shimon ben Gamliel, ha iki yavonis. If this Varamino source was according to Shimon ben Gamliel, there is a yavonis option. Why did the source say that there's no Tumas Yadayim unless it's written in Ashuris? According to Shimon ben Gamliel, there would be Tumas Yadayim even if it were written in something other than Ashuris, if it were written in Greek. Elo, lo kashya. Therefore, we have to come on to a new resolution. How are we to explain this Varaminu source in light of our Mishnah? Our Mishnah said, b'chol lashon, this Varaminu source is not allowing kol lashon. Elo, lo kashya, kan b'sforim, kan b'tfilin mezuzis. The Mishnah that says b'chol lashon is a reference to the Tanakh, the Holy Scriptures, the 24 books of the Tanakh. The source, the Varaminu source that says only Ashuris, that's B'tfilin U'mezuzos. That's with regard to the writing of Tfilin U'mezuzos. The only time they will have their holiness and hence Tumas Yadayim is if it's limited to Ksav Ashuris. Tfilin U'mezuzos, my time, why is that the case with regard to Tfilin U'mezuzos? Why is it that they are not considered holy unless they're written in Ksav Ashuris? Mishum dichtiv behu vehoyu. It says in them, it says the sections, the little parchment that's inserted into the tefillin and the mezuzahs include, amongst other things, parshas from the Kriya Shema. And in the Kriya Shema it says, vayu hadvorim ho'ele. Vehoyu means, behav yosan yehu, they shall remain as they are. Namely, only in Hebrew and using Hebrew characters. So the limitation source, the limiting source, according to this approach, is a source dealing with tefillin and mezuzos. The Gemara asks, really? If you look carefully at that source, the source mentions that if one were to write that which is in Hebrew in Aramaic, or that which is in Aramaic into Hebrew. Now you have to think about this. If this source is talking about tefillin and mezuzos, what section in the tefillin and mezuzos is supposed to be Aramaic? My targum shel kosvoi mikra ikra. What example of targum shel kosvoi mikra, that something that's supposed to be in Aramaic, that you may have written in Hebrew, what example of that is there in tefillin and mezuzos? The bracketed section is to show that up till this point is the main question. Inside the brackets, there's simply a refining of the question, but the main question has been asked. Once again, in order to set up the source as referring to tefillin and mezuzos, we're going to have to explain the phrase that says Targum shekosvu mikra as appropriate with regard to tefillin mezuzos. Or in other words, what part of the tefillin mezuzos is supposed to be in targum? That it's supposed to be in Aramaic, and if you change it to mikra, it will not be metame yadayim. Right after the bracketed section, you'll see a new response, a new approach. But before we get to that, in the brackets, Bishlamo Torah, I understand what the rest of the Torah, there is in fact a point in which it's supposed to be in Aramaic. Ika Yagar Sadusa. That posuk, those words from a posuk in the meeting up of Lavan with Yankiv. Lavan uses the expression Yigar Sadas, which is an Aramaic expression. Elohocha, by the Tfilin and Mezuzis, my Targum Ika, where in Tfilin and Mezuzis is there any example of a pasuk or words that are supposed to be in Aramaic? Well, there aren't. So therefore, it's untenable to suggest that this Veraminu source is talking about Tfilin and Mezuzis. Elo, fourth approach, Loi Kashio, Kan b'Megillah, Kan b'Sforim. The limiting source that says only in Ashuris, only using Hebrew letters, and you must maintain the original language. If it's Mikra, leave it as Mikra, and if there's Targum, leave it as Targum. This is with regard to Megillas Esther. Kan, the Mishnah that suggests Becholoshon b'Sforim. That's a reference to other Sifrei Tanakh. Megillah Maitaima. Why by the Megillah is there this extreme limitation? Dichtiv Bo, it says in the Megillah, Kiksavam Uchilishoinam. As, meaning for our purposes, it is supposed to be as it is, in its script and in its language. In other words, no changes. The Gemara asks, "My Targum Shikos Mikra Ika." Where in the Megillah is there a section that is supposed to be Targum, that's supposed to be in Aramaic? So the Gemara will cite a couple of examples of where there are Aramaic expressions in the Megillah. Omar of Papa Vinishma Pisgam Hamelech. We've dashed underlined the word Pisgam. That's an Aramaic expression, and it's a pasuk in the Megillah. Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchok Omar, V'chol Hanoshim Yitnu Yikar L'Balein. All the women shall give honor to their husbands. The word Yikar is an Aramaic expression. And therefore, if the Megillas Esther is going to have its Kedusha and Tumas Yadayim, you won't be able to translate the word Yikar, for example, into Kovod. Rav Ashi Omar, a fifth response, a fifth approach to explain the Veraminu source so that it does not contradict with our Mishnah. Kitanyo Hahi, the source that says only Ashuris, Bishar Sforim v'Rab Yehudahi. That's a reference to Nevi'im and Ksuvim. Not the Torah, but rather Nevi'im and Ksuvim, and the source is according to Shitas Rabbi Yehuda. If we skip the few lines that are bracketed, the reason for this is that we should be able to see immediately what Rabbi Yehuda holds. So let's do that. Amar Rabbi Yehuda, skipping the bracketed section, Amar Rabbi Yehuda, Av kishitiru raboisenu Yevonis, even when there was an allowance made for Yevonis, lo hitiru ela b'sefer Torah, the allowance or the flexibility was only with regard to the Sefer Torah, not with the other books. Umishum maise de Talmai HaMelech, and because of the incident involving the monarch, the king Talmai, is there an allowance for Greek? But since the Talmai experience concerned only the Torah, it didn't concern the Nevi'im and Ksuvim, therefore there is a limitation with regard to Nevi'im and Ksuvim. Only in Hebrew, and don't translate it, or if there are Aramaic expressions, don't translate them into Hebrew, and Ksav Ashuris. Only then will it be Metame Yodayim. Let's now go back over the bracketed section. We should have mentioned, but never too late. There is a bracket length indicator that's represented by a vertical dash dotted line. You may see that to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara text. But at this point, we're going to go back over the bracketed section. Gemara had mentioned that the Veraminu source, which represents a limiting factor, that's according to Rabbi Yehuda, Desanya. Tefillin and mezuzos ein nichtavim elo ashuris rabosenu hitiru yevonis. We have a little Tanaic source that says that tefillin and mezuzos must be written only in ashuris, and rabosenu allowed Greek. Vehoksi vehoyu, but how can they allow Greek? Does it not say vehoyu that it shall be as it is, no changes? Elohimo, rather, say, Sforim nichtavim b'chol ashoin, v'raboseinu hitiru yivonis. Sforim can be written in any language, and the rabbis allowed yivonis. The expression of hitiru, which we emphasize with a dot underline, gives us the feeling that the second opinion is more lenient than the first opinion. But when you look at what they say, it's not so. Hitiru michlal de Tanakama osar. By your saying the rabbis made allowance for Greek, it sounds like the first opinion would not have made an allowance for Greek. And yet, the first opinion says that Svarim are nichtavim b'chol lashon. Elo Emo, rather restate this seifa as follows. Raboseinu, let's restate the source. The seifa of the source. Raboseinu lo hitiru shichtavu elo yivonis. Whereas the Tanakhama said Svarim are nichtavim b'chol lashon, the Raboseinu are matir only yivonis. Vitanya and Rebuda, Avshitiru Raboseinu Yivonis, Lohitiru Elo Besefer Torah, Mishum Maisid HaMemelech. Rebuda comes along and says that even when the Raboseinu made an allowance for Yivonis, that's only for, with regard to the Sefer Torah. But with regard to the Nevi'im and Ksuvim, only in Hebrew. The allowance for Greek, the source said, is because of an incident involving Talmai HaMelech. Here the Gemara asks, "My he? What is that story?" In the outside margin we have a nose, a topic heading, Maisid de Talmai HaMelech, the story involving this particular monarch, Targum HaToro Liyavonis Adei Shiva Mishtayim Zekenim. This Gemara will tell us about the translation of the Torah into Greek through the efforts of 72 sages, Vaneis, and the miracle Shekivnu Kulam Ledeo Achas, that in the course of their translating the Torah for Talmai, there were numerous sensitive sections in the Torah that given to the into the hands of a Gentile who does not have Drushas, Chazal, and oral traditions to explain difficult psukim, he would look at the psukim as is, and as we mentioned, there are several examples of psukim that if you don't accept an oral Torah tradition to explain it, and you just leave them as they are, they will present a problem. So we will see a story where 72 Gedolim, sages, were asked by this king, Talmai HaMelech, to prepare for him a translation of the Torah in Greek. And when they run into psukim that could represent a theological problem or other type problem, they all changed the pasuk in the Greek form so as to circumvent or preempt any problems. Hopefully this will all become clear as we go on in the Gemara. We do see in front of us some markings. We have, first of all, a Tanaic source that is rather long. It continues on to Amud Beis, the upper part of Tes Amud Beis. In addition, we've also supplied a length marker, or a long marking, to the immediate left-hand side of the Gemara. We wrote in Talmai's name and circled it, and you'll notice a vertical dash line that follows. That gives us a feeling of the length of the mice of the incident involving Talmai, and this marker goes till Amud Beis. Now, the Gemara. Maise the Talmai HaMelech. Talmai is often in English pronounced Ptolemy. So, an incident involved him, Shekines, he gathered, Shivim Ushnaim Zekenim, 72 sages, V'chnisam B'Shivim Ushnaim Botim, and he put them into 72 separate houses, the Lo Gilo Lohem Alma Kinson, and he did not reveal to them why he gathered them. He, Tamai, went into each one of these sages and told them, Kisvu li Toras Moshe Rabchem, I want you to record for me the Torah of Moshe, the Torah that Moshe Rabbeinu gave to Klal Yisrael. And he's asking for it to be recorded in a language that he would understand, namely Greek. Nosan HaKadosh Baruch Hu b'leiv kol echod ve'echod eitza. HaKadosh Baruch Hu put into each one's heart, each one's mind, good counsel. Ve'hiskimu kulon l'das achas. And they all came out agreeing with the same conclusion. The kosvu lo, and they wrote for him the following. The Gemara presents what they wrote in Hebrew, but they did it in a Greek form so that he would understand. What's important in for appreciating this sugya, one would have to be familiar more or less with the correct pasuk and with the original pasuk to appreciate what their change was. So, for example, the first example that's cited in this source involves the first pasuk of the Torah. In the first pasuk of the Torah, in its true form, it says, "Breishis boro Elokim es hashamayim ves haaretz." However, if you leave the pasuk as it is, without commentary, and there is commentary on the pasuk, but if you leave it at face value, there's room to come to think actually a blasphemous thought. If you translate Bereishis Bara Elokim as a Shazorot, one could think that Chas V'Shalom, there's some type of entity, Bereishis, that's Bara, that creates the Almighty. How did they circumvent that problem from arising, from Talmai coming and saying, hey, look at what it says in your Torah, that there's some other entity? So they wrote, V'kosvulo Elokim bara Bereishis. So they presented it that way, and the Rashi explains, Elokim bara Bereishis, Es Hashemayim, in the beginning, where the translation comes out, the Almighty created in the beginning Shamayim v'aretz. And Rashi says, Shelo yomar Bereishis shem hu, Ushtei Rishios Hain, so that someone should not think that Bereishis is the name of something, and that there are two deities. V'rishon bara as hasheni, and the first entity created the second one. That would all be a terrible mistake. So, as to circumvent that, the sages wrote this, Elokim bara Bereishis. Another example, in the story of creation of man, the pasuk appears in the plural, Nase Odom Betzalmeinu V'Dusveinu. They did not write it like that, because if one did, one would think that there are multiple forces that are participating in the creation. Therefore, in their Greek translation, they explained the pasuk as follows: Eeseh Adam Betzelem uvedmus, where the Kodesh Baruch Hu is the one announcing, "I will make him in this particular form." Vayichal bayom hashishi, vayishbois bayom hashvi'i. That's another change. The pasuk actually says, "Vayichal bayom hashishi." Vayichal b'yom hashvi'i mikol malachto asher osa. And if you say that, it would give room to think that there was a creation process taking place on yom hashvi'i. Therefore, they changed it to say vayichal b'yom hashvi'i, that he finished his creation on Friday. The pasuk that they, another pasuk they changed, is Zohar Unekeva Bor Oi. Velo Kosvu Bor Om. They, the sages, did not include the word Bor Om in their translation. because if it was left as it does appear in the original Hebrew, that it says Zohar unekeva borom, the Talmai would have come out with an incorrect version of creation. Namely, that would have meant to him that two sets of Zohar unekevas were created. Hova erdo vavale sham svasam. This pasuk is from the story of the Migdal Bavel, the Tower of Babel. And in the pasuk itself, it says that Hova ner da univale sham svasam. It appears in the plural. In their translation, they translated the pasuk in the singular. Now, the reason for that is fairly obvious, because if they would have left it in the original Greek, in the original Hebrew, that is, Hova Nerda, without the change, then it would have come out that there's some type of multiple entities, multiple forces in heaven. Therefore, they presented the pasuk in the singular, Hova Erdo, I, the Almighty, I alone, so to speak, I will go down and confound their speech, which was the punishment for the Migdal Bavel participants. Vatitzchak Sora Bekroi Veha. The pasuk actually says that Sora laughed Bekirba in her own midst, internally laughed. We know that the Kodesh Baruch Hu expressed discontent with Sora because of her laughter. Why did they change the pasuk instead of saying Bekirba that she laughed within herself, and it says that she laughed at her relatives? The reason for that is because the pasuk records that Avraham also laughed, and the Kodesh Baruch Hu does not express any rage toward Avraham's laughter. So as to not cause Talmai to question why is Kodesh Baruch Hu expressing his discontent only with regard to Sarah, when the same could have been applied to Avraham. So they simply preempted the problem by saying that Sarah's laughter was not internal, a laughter of skepticism toward the Kodesh Baruch Hu, but rather she was laughing at her relatives. And that's something that Avraham did not do. Therefore, there was a different standard applied to Sarah. The pasuk that they changed says, "Ki ba'apom hargu shor ubritzonam ikru evus." This is a reference to Yankiv Avinu's describing of Shimon and Levi that killed out the people of Shechem. So instead of presenting the pasuk in its original form, which would have said "Ki ba'apom hargu ish," that they in their wrath killed men, and that if Talmai would have read that, that would have given rise to his reaction, to a negative reaction. Therefore, they preempted the problem by saying that the Shimon and Levi, they didn't kill men, but rather hargu shor. Animals, ubertzonam ikru evus, and through their will they overthrew or uprooted feeding troughs. The main point for us is the section that says hargu ish hargu shor represents the sages' change from the original hargu ish, which would have meant they killed people. In fact, they did kill off the city of Shechem. The people in that area. However, it wouldn't have been worthwhile for Talmai to have read that. Another change. Vayikach Moishes Ishtoi Vezbono Vayarkivem Al Nosei Bnei Adam. Moshe Rabbeinu took his wife and children, and he put them on. Form of transportation. Now, in the Torah, it says "Vayarkivem al hachamor," that he had them ride on a donkey. If Talmai HaMelech would have read that Moshe Rabbeinu put his family on a donkey for travel and not something more sophisticated, more glamorous, more more expensive, something, nothing more than a donkey, that would have been a bizoyon to Moshe Rabbeinu. And therefore, the Chachomim changed the word from donkey to people transporter. So that the Pasuk is saying that Moshe Rabbeinu put his wife and kids on a people transporter. Another example of a change. The Pasuk says, U'Moshe b'nei Yisrael, asher yoshu b'Mitzrayim, u'b'sha'a rosos, shloishim v'arba me'ashana. Now, the Pasuk itself doesn't say that. This represents their change. The Pasuk says that the Moshe b'nei Yisrael, be'eretz Mitzrayim, was 430 years. If one calculates their actual sojourn in Mitzrayim, one will not come out with the number 430. One will arrive at the number 430 only if he starts, if you start your counting way before. You're talking about a period of time in Avram Avinu's life where there was the Bris Bein Absorim. If you count from that that particular point in time till the Exodus from Mitzrayim, then you will get to your to get to this number 430. But as far as the sojourn in Egypt itself, they were not there for 430 years. Therefore, they added to the pasuk u'b'sha'a rotzos that the Jewish the Jews who existed at the time lived in Mitzrayim and other lands, and it doesn't without specifying them. But altogether, they lived in those places, Shloshim v'arba me'ashana. And that is accurate. So they solved any problem by adding the expression u'b'shar arotzes. Another example. Vayishlach ezatute b'nei Yisrael. The Pasuk is describing the sending of people, and the Rashi adds that Zatuti Loshen Chashivus Aval Nare, which the word Nar appears in the Pasuk, Loshen Katnus, it's a sign of someone insignificant. V'yomar Gruim Shelachem Shelachtem L'Kabel Pnei Shechina, and this Pasuk, being that it comes from the incident involving Matan Torah, if it would have said he sent, that they sent Na'are B'nai Israel, Na'are, as we said, are people that are just mere youths, so it would have looked like the people being sent to, let's say, be representative in the mice of Matan Torah, it would have been a an insult, so to speak. So the word was changed to Zatuti. Zatuti is a word indicating people of significance. Princes and lords and knights and other types of important individuals. Similarly, Ve'el Zatute b'nei Yisrael lo sholach yodoi. This pasuk as well is has that change in it from Na'are to Zatuti, meaning people of rank and significance. Another change, lo chemed echod mehem nosasi. In the original pasuk, it says lo chamor echod. But this is Moshe Rabbeinu declaring that he took nothing of the people. So if it would have said lo chamor echod mehem nosasi, I didn't take even a donkey from any of them. So that would have left room for saying, okay, maybe you didn't take a donkey from anybody, but other articles you did take from the population. So to that, the Chachamim offered a preemptive solution and said, Lo chemed echod mehem nosesi. Moshe Rabbeinu is saying, I didn't take anything of desire from anybody. I didn't take any item from anyone. Asher cholak Hashem elokecho oisom lohir l'chol ha'amim. Vayelech vayavod Elohim achirim asher lo CVC, Le'ovdam. The important addition here is the word Le'ovdam. The original pasuk we've included on the side of the Gemara. You'll notice a couple of psukim written on the inside margin. It says in pasuk Perek Dalet Pasuk Yutes. This section is dealing with a warning against idol worship, idolatry. It says Upen Tisa Einecha Shemaim V'Isa Shemesh Sireh V'Skuchavim Kol Tzva Shemaim. A warning here against bowing to the sun and moon and worshipping them like nations of the world do. There's another pasuk we want to take note of. Dvarim Perek Yudzayim Pasuk Gimel. Vayelech vayavod Elohim achirim vayishtachu lahem V'lashemesh o le'yoreach o l'chol tzvo ha'shamayim asher lo tzivisi. The pasuk gimel that they presented to Talmai said asher lo tzivisi li'ovdom, that I did not command to be worshipped. Had they left the pasuk as it is, which says then they went off and worshipped other gods that I did not command, Asher lo tzivisi, one would have thought that the meaning is Asher lo tzivisi, I did not command them to be created in the first place. Then if someone will say, what, but they exist, so how is that? Maybe they have their own strength, that their own inherent strength that can supersede the requests or the commands of the Almighty. Therefore, it's not left asher lo tzivisi, which would have led to that impossible incorrect interpretation or reading. Rather, they added the word asher lo tzivisi le'ovdom, that I may have made them, but I did not make them in order to be worshipped. In the section of the Torah that deals with things, food items that are forbidden to eat, it says that we shall not, that the Jewish people are prohibited from eating the arneves. It turns out that the name of Talmai's wife was Arneves. The kosvu lo es tziras haraglayim. In the section of the Torah that in which Arneves appears, they replaced it with the expression the short-legged creature, Tziras Haraglayim. And thereby, they did not include her name. Velo kosvu lo es ha-Arneves. They didn't write that, which is the name of a creature. They just used a descriptive term, which people would supposedly understand as a reference to the Arneves. So why did they not write the name of the animal itself? B'nei she'ishto shel Talmai Arneves shmo. His wife's name was that, shelo yomar. They're leaving out that expression was done so that he should not say, sochaku bi hayehudim, the Jews are making light of me, are laughing at me, Vehitilu Shem Ishti Batorah, and they put my wife's name in the Torah. So, as to preempt that problem, they simply left out the word Arneves and replaced it with the expression Tziras Haraglayim, the short-legged creature. Rabbi Shimon Gamliel Omer Af Besforim Lo Hitiru Shiyichtavu Elo Yevonis. Rabbi Shimon Gamliel says that even with regard to Sforim, there is no allowance in other languages except for Greek. Omer Bevom Rabbi Yochanan Halocha Kriv Shimon Gamliel. Rabbi Avo quotes Rabbi Yochanan as saying, we follow his ruling. V'yomar Rabbi Avo, Omer Rabbi Yochanan, my time Shimon Gamliel. Why does Shimon Gamliel make an allowance for Greek? Omer Kro, the Pasuk says, Yaft Elokim Liefes V'yishkoin Bolei Shem. This is a Pasuk that's in the context of the sons of Noach. Noach had three sons, Shem, Ham, V'yefes. And this Pasuk is making a reference to Yefes and to Shem. two of the three sons. And we are in the Gemara Darshan's Dvorov Shel Yefes, you bale shem. The words of Yefes shall be found in the tents of shame. The tents of shame is a reference to the study halls of Torah. And how do you have a representation of Yefes in the study halls of Torah? Well, since Yefes had children, one of whom was Yavan, so by having having Sforim written in Greek, you have a fulfillment of this pasuk of some aspect of Yefes being in the Ohalei Shem. The Gemara asks, well, if we're looking for some representation of Yefes to be in the study halls of Torah, so then why did you pick specifically Yavan? He had other sons, for example, Gomer and Magog. These are other names of Bnei Yefes. So the Gemara asks, the Ema Gomer Umagog, other nationalities. Why does Rav Shmuel focus on Yavan, which is just one of them? Amar Bichia Bar Abba Hainu Taimo Dichtiv. The pasuk says Yaft Elokim Liefes, and the explanation of how you go from that to specifically Yavan is as follows: Yafuso Shel Yefes. The beauty of Yefes, yehe ba'al shame. And when you're looking for a beautiful language, that you'll find only in Greek, and not these other nations, Gomer and Magog. And since the pasuk says that we want that HaKadosh Baruch Hu makes a reference to the beauty of Yefes shall be in the Olei Shem, where is there beauty in Yefes? And the answer to that is in the Greek, which is from Yefes. Ein bein koyin moshuach b'shem ha'mishcha l'meruba b'godim elapar habo al kol ha'mitzvus. The Mishnah declares that there is no difference between a Kohen Gadol, which was anointed with the special anointing oil, versus the Kohen Gadol who was installed into the office of Kohen Gadol by wearing the 8 high priestly vestments, the special 8 clothing of the Kohen Gadol. There was a period in history during the time of Yoshua Melech that the special Shemen HaMishcha, the special anointing oil, was hidden away and no longer used. Therefore, subsequent Kohanim Gedolim were installed into office through the wearing of the 8 special Kohen Gadol clothing. What halachic difference is there between a Kohen Gadol installed into Kohen Gadol status through Shemen HaMishcha versus Merubel Gadim? So the Mishnah says the only difference is Elapar Habo Al Kol HaMitzvahs. That's a reference to a case where a Kohen Gadol issued an erroneous legal ruling and acted thereupon. In such a case, he would bring a special korban, which the Mishnah calls a Par Habo Al Kol HaMitzvahs. Well, it depends on how that Kohen Gadol was installed into office. If he was installed through the use of Shemen HaMishcha, so he would bring that Korban in the event that he issued an erroneous legal ruling. However, if he was installed through Ribui Begadim, and he issued an erroneous legal ruling and stumbled thereupon, he would not bring that Korban. We now continue in the Seifa of the Mishnah. Before we go into the further reading of the Mishnah, let's take a look at the outside margin where we provide an overview, a topic heading. We have a Roman numeral number 1, Kohen Gadol, and under that heading we have Moshuach B'Shem HaMishcha and Merubah B'Gadim, which we just discussed. There's Roman number 2 is Kohen Gadol, one is called HaMeshamesh, and one is She'ovar. Here, there's another situation. What happens when a Kohen Gadol becomes unfit because of, let us say, Tumah or some other some other factor that may temporarily put him out of office. So if that situation comes up, there's a replacement Kohen Gadol that serves as Kohen Gadol until the problem that that presented itself to the first Kohen Gadol passes. So, for example, if it's an issue of Tumah, so once the Tumah period passes, the first Kohen Gadol then goes back into his position, and the replacement Kohen Gadol leaves. When we say leaves, we have to say that with a certain amount of reservation. But for the time being, we refer to him as the Kohen Sheovar. He left the Kohen Gadol position, which he had occupied simply as a replacement individual for a temporary replacement individual. The Mishnah now, as we go on in the Seifa, Roman numeral number 2, Ein bein Kohen Mishamesh leKohen Sheovar. There's no difference between the acting Kohen Gadol and the acting meaning the official Kohen Gadol and the replacement Kohen Gadol who served as an acting Kohen Gadol, but then when the original one came back, this replacement fellow leaves. He's called the Kohen Shavar. What difference is there? Elo, the only difference is Elapar Yom HaKippurim V'Asiris HaEfa. That means that the Kohen Sheovar, when Yom Kippur comes, he does not bring the par Yom HaKippurim. This is the par that the Kohen Gadol would bring. So, if Yom Kippur arrives and the original basic or main Kohen Gadol is serving, so he alone brings the par Yom HaKippurim and not the Kohen Sheovar. Another difference between them concerns the Asir Seifa. The Asir Seifa was a meal offering that was brought on a daily basis by the Kohen Gadol. So which Kohen Gadol brings that? The answer to that is the Kohen Mishamesh and not the Kohen Sheovar. The Gemara draws an inference. Before we go further, you'll notice the diamond, and we have on the outside margin under our Mivneh heading, the word, the diamond appears, and the word Ha. The word ha is a word indicating an inference. These are diyukim me ha-resha v'ha-seifa b'matara l'das moni masnisin. We're going to draw an inference from the resha, and likewise with the seifa. All of this is with the attempt to find out who is the author of our Mishnah. And in order to determine authorship of the Mishnah, we do that by studying what the legal opinions that were expressed in the Mishnah are. So our Gemara continues. Let us turn to the Gemara itself. We mentioned that with regard to what is said in the Reisha with regard to the Par Yom HaKippurim and Asiris HaEfa, with regard to those things, we say zeh v'zeh shoven, meaning the meruba begodim and the moshuch b'shen ha-mishcha. So let's go over this point again. The Reisha of the Mishnah mentioned that there is no difference between the kohen moshuach b'shen ha-mishcha and the meruba begodim except for the par ha-ba'al kol ha-mitzvah. That was the special korban brought in the event that there is an erroneous legal ruling. We infer, though, let's read from the beginning of the Gemara, Ha le'inyan par Yom HaKippurim v'asir sa'efa, but with regard to those matters, which, by the way, were mentioned at the end of the Mishnah, but they were not mentioned in the Reisha. So with regard to these things, par Yom HaKippurim and asir sa'efa, Moshuach b'shem Mishcha and Mubagodim have the same status, have the same standing, namely, it doesn't matter whether the Kohen Gadol was invested through the anointing with oil, or wearing the 8 garments. When Yom Kippur comes around, he brings, whether he be a Shemen HaMishcha or a Merubagam, he will bring a Par Yom HaKippurim. And likewise, he will bring his daily meal offering. Masnisin Delo Krabi Meir. Our Mishnah that says that the Meruba Begodim does not bring the Par HaBoa Kol HaMitzvahs, this does not conform to Rabbi Meir. The Rabbi Meir, Hotanya, according to Rabbi Meir, we have a Tanaic source that says, Meruba begodim, mevi par haba kol ha-mitzvahs de Rabbi Meir. The Chachamim Omrim, Eino Mevi. In this particular source, notice we dashed, underlined Rabbi Meir so as to draw our attention to this opinion. What does he say? That the Meruba Begadim, in the event that he issues an erroneous legal ruling, will bring the Par Haba Kol HaMitzvahs. Our Mishnah said the Meruba Begadim does not. So the Gemara wants to suggest that our Mishnah is not like Rabbi Meir. Well, my time with Rabbi Meir, what's the basis for his teaching? The Sanyo, the Pasuk, which talks about the Par Haba Al Kol HaMitzvahs, the Pasuk, we have included it, by the way, on the inside margin, Vayikra, Dalet Pasuk Gimel, you may notice it, and let's read it together. It says, Im HaKohen HaMoshiach Yecheto V'Ashmasom V'Hikriv Al Chatos Oshichoto Par Ben Bokor Tomim Lashem Chatos. So our Tanaic source says, Moshiach, Ein Lielo Moshuach B'Shem HaMishcha. Since the Pasuk made a reference to the Kohen Moshiach, the word Moshiach is associated with the word anointing. So I would think that only the Kohen Gadol anointed with the anointing oil brings the Par Haba Kol HaMitzvahs. Meruba Begadim Minayin. From where do I know that Meruba Begadim also brings Par Haba Kol HaMitzvahs? Tamad Lomar HaMoshiach. The extra hay serves as an inclusionary force to include the Meruba Begadim also as someone who would bring the Par Haba Kol HaMitzvahs, and that's the basis for Rabbi Meir. B'mai Ukimno. Up till this point, how are we establishing our Mishnah? Dolo K'Rabbi Meir. Not like or unlike Rabbi Meir. Well, let's go on. Amos Seifa. Check out the Seifa, the second part of the Mishnah. And this is a quote from our Mishnah. In fact, in the Mishnah itself, we wrote the word Seifa in anticipation of this quote. It said in the Mishnah, Ein bein koyin mishamish l'koyin she'ovar elopar yom kippurim v'asir so'eifa. The only difference between the current primary Kohen Gadol and the Kohen Gadol, the fellow who had replaced him temporarily as Kohen Gadol, the difference of these, the Par Yom Kippurim and the Asir Seifa, Hal Lechol Divrayim Zev Zeh Shavin. But with regard to all other matters, the Kohen Hamashamish and the Kohen Sheovar are the same. For example, imagine the Kohen Sheovar. He wants to offer a sacrifice. If he does, he wears, as every Kohen must do, he has to wear his Big Day Kahuna. But which Big Day Kahuna does he wear? According to this, he will wear the Begadim of the Kohen Gadol, the 8 garments. Let's say with regard to issues of Tumah and issues of whom he can marry, the Kohen Sheovar will have the same dinim as the Kohen HaMashamish. This paralleling of the Kohen Sheovar with the Kohen Mashamish is in conformity to Rabbi Meir's opinion. Asa'on, the Rabbi Meir, that works out like Rabbi Meir. The Sanya. Before we go further, let's just review this opinion. Rabbi Meir is saying that basically the Kohen Sheovar and the Kohen HaMashamish have all the same halachas, with the exception of the Par Yom Kippurim and the Asiras Ha'efa. But with regard to everything else, they're the same. Well, as we said, this works out like Rabbi Meir Desanya. The following Tanaic source will bear this point out. Ira bo psul, uminu kohen acher tachtov. In the event that some deficiency occurs to the Kohen Gadol, and they had a need to appoint a replacement fellow, Rishon Chozu Avadosa, when the deficiency ceases to pose a problem, the original Kohen Gadol goes back to his role. Sheni, the Kohen Sheovar, the one who had come in as a replacement, a temporary replacement, he's called the Sheni in this case. We also call him the Kohen Sheovar. Kol Mitzvahs Kohuna Gadol Olav Divrei Rabbi Meir. All of the halachas applying to a regular Kohen Gadol apply to him as well. You'll notice how we dashed underlined that line. That's because this is the main point. We're trying to show that with the exception of Par Yom Kippurim Asir Seifo, they are really one in this. They all enjoy or are bound by the same Kohen Gadol standard. We have a brackets here. the brackets demonstrates that this is the only reason, or up till this point, is what the Gemara intended in bringing in the source. If we skip the brackets, we come out with the following. If you look in the Gemara after the bracketed section, the bracket length indicator is a vertical dash dotted line that appears to the immediate left-hand side of the Gemara text. Right after that, it says, the Gemara says, Reisha Rabbonon, V'Seifa Rebbe Meir. Are we to conclude that our Mishnah is of dual authorship? Namely, the Reisha we pointed out in the first section of the Gemara, where we had our diamond of the opening of the Gemara and the conclusion that we drew after that, was that our Mishnah was not like Rebbe Meir, and rather like the Rabbonon. Remember that Rebbe Meir, regarding the issue of the Reisha, Rebbe Meir wanted to say that the Merubah Begadim brings parabolic mitzvahs, and our Mishnah says it doesn't. So we had concluded that the Reisha was not like Rebbe Meir, rather like the Rabbonon. And the Seifa we have most recently shown, the Seifa which parallels the Kohen Sheovar and the Kohen Meshamish, that is actually like Rebbe Meir. So is that how we are supposed to approach our Mishnah, as being of a dual authorship? So Rav Chista will tell us, Omar Rav Chista in, yes, in fact, Reisha Rabbonon, V'Seifa Rebbe Meir. Generally speaking, that's an uncomfortable situation, but Rav Chista says, that's how we have to accept things. Rav Yosef has a different approach, and he says, Rebbe he, our Mishnah is of a singular authorship. It's authored by Rebbe. Now, Rebbe, in developing his ideas on different topics, so he drew from different Tanaic authorities. So with regard to the issue of the Merubah Begadim, he chose to take an approach similar to that of the Chachomim. With regard to the Kohen Sheovar, he chose to take the approach suggested by Rebbe Meir. They're two different topics, and Rebbe was eclectic in developing his view of these different matters. So as far as Rav Yosef is concerned, there is a singular authorship, namely that of Rebbe. We have a bracketed section in the Brisa that we skipped. Let's go back to it. The bracketed section represents an additional opinion, or a second opinion, other than that of Rebbe Meir, with regard to the Kohen Sheovar. Rebbe Meir mentioned that the Kohen Sheovar, when the original Kohen Gadol comes back, does not lose his Kohen Gadol status. Continuing now in the bracketed section, we're backing up, as you can see, Rebbe Yoisi Omer, Rishon Chozer Avodaso. When the Psul passes, the original Kohen Gadol goes back to his position. Sheni, the second guy, meaning the replacement fellow, Eino Roy, Lo L'Kohen Gadol V'lo L'Kohen Hedyo. He does not serve, he cannot serve as a Kohen Gadol, nor as a Kohen Hedyot. So he is, in fact, in limbo. Kohen Hedyot being the common Kohen. V'yom Rabbi Yossi, Maisib Rabbi Yosef ben Ulam, Mitzipori. Rabbi Yossi reports a story involving Rabbi Yosef ben Ulam from the town of Tzipori. She'ira boi psul b'Kohen Gadol. In his time, there was a Kohen Gadol that experienced a psul, a deficiency. Uminuhu tachtov, and Rav Yosef ben Ulam was appointed as a replacement Kohen Gadol. Ubo mais lifnei chachomim v'yomru, and this incident came to the knowledge of the chachomim, and they ruled. Rishon chozer avodaso, the original Kohen Gadol, when the psul passes, he goes back to his position of Kohen Gadol. Sheni, in this particular story, it would have been Rav Yosef ben Ulam. And now this is explained. Kohen Gadol, he is not fit to serve as Kohen Gadol, Mishum Eva, because that will cause a situation of tension between the official Kohen Gadol and this Kohen Sheovar, this replacement fellow. You can well imagine if the official Kohen Gadol sees that there's someone else also wearing the eight garments and also observing the same standard of halacha applicable to a Kohen Gadol, that will cause a sense of strife. So in order to avoid that, we say that the Kohen She'ovar does not serve as Kohen Gadol. Next, Kohen Hedyot, and he is also not fit to be viewed or to practice his priesthood as a Kohen Hedyot, Mishum, because of another legal concept. Ma'alin B'Kodesh V'lo Moridin. We raise up in levels of sanctity and do not decline. Meaning, this replacement Kohen Gadol had in fact experienced high office or highest Kohen office. For us to say, well, once you leave that, you now go back to being a regular Kohen, that would be a sense of demotion, which we do not allow because of this principle, Malin B'Kodesh V'loi Moridin. We turn now to the Mishnah. Ein bein boma gedola leboma ktana elo psochim. Before we go further, let's glance at the outside margin where we have a topic heading, the nosei. Moni masnisin, who is the author of our Mishnah, that I have deal bein boma gedola leboma ktana, that the difference between a central altar and the private altar, bishas heter abomas. In Jewish history, there were times that private altars were allowed. This existed, for example, immediately upon the entrance of the Jewish people into the land of Israel. The central boma was located at a place called Gilgal for 14 years. During those 14 years that the Jews were occupied in conquering and dividing the land, personal altars were allowed. After those 14 years, the Mishkan was set up in Shiloh for a period of 369 years. During that time, private altars were forbidden. With the destruction of Shiloh, the central boma was transferred to Nov and Givon, two communities for a total of 57 years. During that time, personal altars were once again reinstated. Our Mishnah is focusing on those periods of time where there was an allowance for personal altars. What is the difference between the personal altar and the central altar? So our Mishnah says that the difference between the personal altar during the period of Heter Bamos and the central one was have a rak ke'ein psochim, the sacrifices that are similar to a korban Pesach. In what sense? Chayvos hakavula hensman, obligatory sacrifice, just like the korban Pesach is an obligatory sacrifice. And it is also calendar related. Namely, the Korban Pesach was born on the 14th of Nisan. So it has two aspects, or two characteristics. It's obligatory with a bound time, with a fixed time. That will be the point of difference. In other words, korbana sacrifices that have those characteristics will be the difference. And what does that mean? That they will be offered only on the Boma Gedola, not on a private altar. Avol, chayvos she'ein kavua lo hensman, obligatory sacrifices that are not time related, kan v'kan lo kervu, they would not be offered, not only with regard to private altars, but not offered on public altars either. An example of a chova she'ein kavua lo hensman would be something like a korban chatos, a sin offering. Let's turn to the Mishnah. We began, and let's read it again. Ein bein boma gedola leboma ktana ela psochim. The only difference between the large boma, the central boma, and the personal boma would be the korban pesach. That's as far as a literal translation is concerned. The korban pesach being offered only at the central boma and not at the private one. Ze haklal. The rule is that anything that's brought voluntarily, that's nider v'nidev. We saw the difference in these expressions in a previous Mishnah, but for our purposes right now, nider v'nidev represents voluntary type offerings. Those can be brought, the boma, on the personal boma, we call boma ktana. V'chol she'eno lo nider v'lo nidev, eno korev v'boma. Non-voluntary sacrifices, let us say, obligatory sacrifices, they are not brought on the boma ktana, but they would be brought, possibly, on the boma gedola. The Gemara asks with a tone of wonderment, Psochim v'sulo, is korban psochim the only example of difference between the boma gedola and the boma ketana? How can that be? In the Seifa, it said, in the Seifa of the same Mishnah, it said that if things are not voluntary, they are not brought on a private altar, but they could be brought on a public altar, so that the, let's say, a korban that's obligatory, not just the korban Pesach, but other obligatory korbanos could be brought on the central boma as well. So why does the Mishnah say that the only point of difference is a korban Pesach, when other obligatory korbanos would also be a point of difference, namely not allowed on a private altar, but yes, to be brought on the central public altar? The Gemara answers, Emo ke'ein psachim. The use of the term psachim in the Mishnah was not specifically the Korban Pesach, but things, sacrifices that have characteristics of the Korban Pesach, which are sacrifices that are obligatory with fixed times. Obligatory korbanos that have a fixed calendar time for their sacrificing, those are brought on the central boma and not on the private boma. Money. Who holds like that? The Gemara answers, Rabbi Shimon hi. This conforms to the opinion of Rabbi Shimon, who is found at the end of Maseches Zvachim, and it's quoted here, Disanya. Rabbi Shimon Omer, Af tzibur lo ikrivu el psochem v'choyve shigvu lahem zman. Even the public, during the time of Heter Bomos, even the public would offer on the central altar Korban Pesachs and obligatory korbanos that have fixed times. Avol choyve shein kovu lahem zman. Obligatory korbanos that are not based, are not time related, hocho v'hocho lo korev, on here and here, namely on the public altar and the private altar, they would not be offered. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.